by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. We've made it, Janet. We've made it to mid-September.
I think it's a miracle. I like the way you just ended that because that's really how life has been lately. It is a miracle and it is unreal that it is September. I mean, I'm still living in about, I don't even know that I've made it much past spring break in my mind. Like I'm still thinking it's about March. So welcome to time flies. You know, I used to always laugh at old people, but I guess that's where I am, that time does fly as the earth spins faster the older I get. So
there seems to have been a lot of information that comes out during the year because we talk all the time that Game and Fish's job doesn't start and end with hunting seasons. It's a year-round process that information is being collected. And really, we've had some crazy years the last couple of years that have been almost scary at times with some of the species.
That's right. You know, as the weather patterns continue to change throughout Wyoming, and we seem to have, you know, either more drastic droughts or more drastic winters, or then it switches to more mild and it causes a lot of changes in how we have to deal with things. And boy, I'll tell you, I'm looking forward to a mellow year at some point in the near future, because keeping up the pace that Game and Fish has kept up for about the last 10 years has been a little rough with, you know, the disease issues that we have to deal with, again, the weather patterns, all those things that habitat that come into play. It can be a little bit tiring at times.
You know, obviously we've had that warm streak, the hot temperatures for the last few weeks. So it really, you know, the elk haven't really come to their hunting grounds yet, or the areas that they'll be when I need to get out there. And we brought Brandon Werner in again this week because we have a lot of seasons that will be or are underway now. And it may get confusing for some folks, but it's important, I think, that we let people know what the hunting forecast is going to be, what the species are looking like, and how things are going to shape up in 2024.
In 2024, the populations are affected by what happened in 2023 and what happened in 2022 and what happened in 2021 and so on and so forth back several years. And so it is one of those situations where we continually monitor, we continually watch.
Yeah, Brandon, I know that your job never ends. You're always researching, you're always collecting data, you're always boots on the ground, looking and seeing what's out there. And in your opinion, how is 2024 going to shape up?
I'll kind of answer that with backtracking a few years to see or to tell you how we are here, where we're at. I'll be honest with you, things are looking pretty good. So in 21, we had a pretty dang bad drought, and we had EHD or blue tongue, which is epizootic hemorrhagic disease, come through. And it really knocked back a lot of pronghorn antelope and white-tailed deer in the Casper region. Now, since then, they've been rebounding for sure. And then we had the hard winter of 22 and 23, but we did not see near the mortality in our deer and antelope that like the Western Wyoming. The really good thing about that really hard winter is it put a lot of moisture on the ground. The reservoirs are full. Things are looking great. As you all know, last summer, so summer 23, we had a ton of rain all summer. We were like 3 inches above normal. So that was fantastic. So all those animals last summer got really fat, really happy. And then we went into this last winter that we had that was super mild. We hardly got any snow. So then winter survival was great. So they're in great body condition, had really mild winter. So they're still fat and happy come spring. And then they start putting fawns on the landscape. And when you got a fat, happy doe putting fawns on the landscape, your fawn survival is going to be higher. And that's what we're seeing for sure. Let's talk about elk first. You said the elk really haven't gone back down to your hunting grounds yet. And they're just getting started breeding here. But elk in central and eastern Wyoming, are over objective. So all of our elk areas now, we're kind of making a shift, have an objective of how many elk we believe should be in that herd. And we get that number talking with sportsmen, talking with landowners, seeing what the habitat can support. But we're over that. And so there's a lot of elk out there. Bull hunting is fantastic in the Casper region because the bulls are really more distributed throughout, and everything pretty much, or in my country at least, is limited quota. So if you get one of these licenses, it should be pretty good. There's some pretty dang nice bulls out there. Cows, on the other hand, can be a little bit difficult because there is a mix of public and private land, and those elk kind of know where to hang out.
It's funny how that works too.
Exactly. They do know. And you know, that is part of the problem with one of the reasons why we are over objective. So that means we have more elk on the ground than we want, right? Than the habitat can support. That is one of our big challenges here in the eastern part of the state, central and eastern part of the state. And so don't forget that.
So, Brandon, elk hunting, we know, is great. The Type 8 license is available this year, kind of the first time in a long time, and you know, in Area 7 especially, right?
The Type 8 essentially means that you can buy as many of these licenses as you want, but make sure you read the regulations, because the Type 8 license is only valid in certain counties, certain times of year. And then it becomes off National Forest October 15th through the end of December. So that means you can still hunt state, you can still hunt BLM with it, but you cannot hunt National Forest. You know, some people are a little upset because they couldn't get their Type 4 and 6 licenses, but we cut them back a little bit because of the Type 8 licenses.
So
there's several areas in eastern Wyoming that have these Type 8s, but other than Area 7, most of them are private land only. So make sure you open that regulation book. And while we're on license types, there's several areas, Area 7 included, that have a Type 2 license. Type 2s are typically point restricted licenses. So like a 5-point or less or something like that. So just make sure you read the regulation book. They're a lot easier to get this year. Usually like Sportsman's or Rocky Mountain Discount, anywhere like that should have them. And we have them here at the office.
And then also you can download it right to your phone so that you have it with you all the time. Get it from the hunt planner at wgft.wyo.gov. All right. We've talked about elk. Brandon, let's talk more about some of the other species that are on the land this year.
Yeah. So let's move into white-tailed deer. So like I said, in 21, we lost a lot of white-tailed deer. They are on the rise again. So the Black Hills in the Casper region is like the hot spot for white-tailed deer hunting on public land. And they really took a hit, but they're coming back up there. It's not going to be like pre-2021 yet, but things are definitely looking better. Looking closer to Casper, I've seen so many white-tails around. But it does make it a little bit tough because whitetails like water, and water is usually privately owned. So there's not a ton of public hunting for whitetails in the Casper region.
All right, Brandon, we've talked about elk. We've talked about whitetail. How about mule deer?
Typically, in the Casper region, we are under objective for mule deer. So we have quite a bit less mule deer than we would like. And there's several different factors going on. So we have quite a bit of chronic wasting disease. We have changes in habitat. We do have some predation. Vehicle collisions is a big one. You know, possibly competition with elk. So we haven't done our fawn to doe ratio, our classifications for mule deer yet. I anticipate them being higher. We'll get those done in November. But the few that I've seen out there have had quite a few fawns. So.
And Drew, you keep talking about how busy we are and how much we do continually work. And it sounds like we're kind of complaining. And I just want to make sure everyone knows that that's not what's happening. It just means that we are actually out there on the landscape in the field doing this work year round because we love it, right? We are all in it for the wildlife and for the Wyoming outdoors. And so that is one of the things that makes Wyoming so fantastic is our biologists do get out there, do get that scientific data, and are able to talk to all of the people so that we can balance kind of that social along with the biological, along with the political aspects of managing wildlife.
Exactly. So Janet had talked a little bit about ratios, and ratios in mule deer are really important for us. So in the Casper region, we have general and limited quota hunting seasons for mule deer. So general, as a resident, you can just buy a deer license and go deer hunting. And there we usually manage for about 20 to 30 bucks per 100 does to provide good opportunity. You know, if we start getting under that 20, maybe we'll put like an antler point restriction on, like a 3-point or better, or something like that. But if you have a limited quota license, so like areas 10, 34, and 89, there's some really good hunting opportunity there. It's hard to get those licenses, but if you do, we average about 5.5 year old is the buck that's harvested there. That's like 21 to 23 inches wide. So it's pretty good, but general, typically the deer aren't quite as big.
You know, I've noticed that the area from Casper to Newcastle, I've seen a lot of collision deaths with deer and antelope through there. And boy, we were driving up there the other day and I felt like we didn't go a quarter mile and just saw, you know, some animal on the road. So they're definitely thick and moving around.
I'll be honest with you. So drought years like we're having this year, there's more green grass in the road ditches. There's more sweet clover. So those deer, especially at night, will come into the road and get hit, unfortunately. But vehicle collisions in this state, I think they take about 6,000 mule deer a year.
Several years ago, State Farm put out the number that an average collision with wildlife is $11,600. So, you know, save yourself just a little bit, slow down and watch for that wildlife. And, you know, accidents do happen, but we do want to keep people safe as well as wildlife.
Oh, yeah. And if we weren't seeing deer and antelope, it was a skunk that were all over. Boy, there were a lot of them for sure. But Brandon, let's move on to antelope.
Like I talked about, 21, you know, we were in a low. We had bad EHD outbreak, had some drought, and, you know, we kind of skirted around that hard winter, 22, 23. But this year, the fawn production was just phenomenal. So every August, Game and Fish personnel, we go out, we get our buck to doe ratios, we get our fawn to doe ratios, and they were great. So each area was a little bit different, but one of mine in the rattlesnakes had more fawns than does, which is in the last 20 years kind of unheard of. Closer to Casper, I've had like 90 fawns per 100 does. Wow. So anything over 80, I'm really happy with. 70, like, I can deal with. But here all the way basically to Montana, Nebraska line, there's some awesome fawn production this year.
That is great news to hear. And Brandon, when a doe has multiples, how many can she have?
That's kind of a tricky question. So most does will have twin fawns, but depending on how the health of the mother is, or just different habitat factors or predators in there, it's kind of hard to keep two alive. But the conditions were great. The mother was in great condition this year. We got rain when we needed to. I know it dried up this summer, but, you know, last summer was great. That the fawns are really living. You know, I've seen three, sometimes at the most four fawns with a doe. I'm not sure if those were all of hers. Sometimes they'll do like nursery groups. But I'd say three is pretty rare.
We kind of monitor the golf course right outside my house where you see them all, and there's a mother with four, or at least a doe with four, and we've seen that doe with those same four all summer long. So we were just kind of questioning. I mean, that's powerful.
I mean, the amount of resources on the golf course with the awesome green grass all the time, I mean, that's really the limiting factors on how many fawns can be out there. So like deer, for example, in the Black Hills, twin fawns every year. When here, maybe not as many good resources have one or two, but this year, a lot of twos. So
definitely, it's good to see.
We talked about 66 per 100 mm-hmm. in mule deer. What is it for?
I'd say closer to 75, because they're not as long lived as deer are. So they need to reproduce faster to maintain and grow. Like I said, once we're over 80, I'm really happy, but anything over that's like pretty dang awesome.
Nice.
Well, I mean, the forecast for hunting over the next couple of years looks strong, and maybe strong as it has in the last 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we're on that, Upland game this year is just going to be like, I can't even comprehend how great it's going to be. Like, if you're ever looking for a time to get into upland hunting, it is this year. We've had 2 or 3 years of great breed production from chuckers, Hungarian partridge, sage grouse, blue grouse, anything here in the Casper region. And then this year, they just really took off.
Well, I feel that things are looking great for the future. And I know, Brandon, we talk a lot about our area. And because our area is doing so well, people from other parts of the state are getting licenses to come here, because some of the areas across the state were hit a lot harder than we were. So I know that it's fortunate for us not to be in that type of a situation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're spot on, Drew. I'd like to put a little asterisk when we keep talking about how fantastic things are, right? Those are the areas that we are talking about that the Casper region manages. It's not necessarily the entire state as a whole. And we do encourage you, if you don't hunt in the areas that we are referring to today, to definitely reach out to the Game and Fish office that does manage that. And those maps are available online, and you can contact the biologist just like Brandon sitting here and ask them those questions and find those things out. And you can do that before you apply, and you can do it now as you're getting ready to maybe go hunt. And so keeping that in mind, again, that little asterisk, this is the areas that we are talking about. And it is, we're looking forward to a good year, and we're hoping for a nice mild winter with the perfect amount of moisture, with the perfect mild temperatures, but yet enough to freeze the ice for ice fishermen. So we, you know, all of those things that we do want to line up perfectly to keep the populations growing that we're referring to.
And remember, and we're going to talk about this in the next couple of weeks, but the CWD mandatory areas, if you're in one of those areas, make sure that you're doing the proper submitting of the lymph nodes and finding out exactly what needs to happen. So we'll talk more about that in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
And welcome back to Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. Of course, you can follow along on the radio station's app to hear old episodes and all of our current ones, and with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, it is full-on hunting season. We are just days away from the waterfowl season opening up for the first time, and it's just balls to the wall.
It's just great to just talk to people, and some pretty decent animals. I've seen some good elk that have been pulled off the mountains, and there was a great antelope down in a Red Desert that was shot down there by, a woman out of Texas. And I think it scored something crazy like 94 or something. It's a great time.
You know, we talked earlier in the show to Game and Fish about the health of the animals that are out there. And really, the last couple of winters have really been beneficial to the way the mule deer and the whitetails are starting to come back, and antelope are looking pretty good in our area, and obviously elk. And you were out this week and doing some scouting, and that's what you got to do at this point if you're just starting to get out, and having the right equipment out when you're going is very key.
Yeah, and you just never know. I mean, I do have an archery tag for an area, and brought my bow along with me, but really just trying to get better lay of the land. You know, I didn't get to put much time in this summer to kind of really get a good game plan anyways. And so it's nice to, have somebody else that can get you out there and kind of show you around, and keep you company when you're making those tracks. And but putting the time in, we've talked about, just being prepared is, a key to any successful hunt. And these elk move a lot, so having eyes on the herds and kind of getting an idea of what they're doing, and if they're up high, if they're down low, if they're down in the sagebrush. I mean, you got to put the time in.
During when we're out fishing, we're always talking about watching your electronics and putting waypoints at different areas, maybe where you caught good fish or you ran in mm-hmm. to some low water and some protruding items coming out of the water. There's equipment that you can do that same thing when you're hunting on the land. There are GPS systems and all kinds of electronics that can help you out.
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest tool that most people utilize anymore is Onyx Hunt Maps, and that one allows you to set a trail. You know, so if you're, you know, going up a drainage, or maybe you're going to have some buddies drop you off on the top of a drainage, and you're going to, you know, walk down to your camp at the base of the drainage, or whatever the case is, at least it gives you that sense of awareness of where you are, and gives you a little bit of faith. And, you know, okay, if I'm walking down this drainage, then I can get to where I'm going to go if I follow this. And the hunt maps are great, you know, but having like a backup battery pack or something with you to be prepared on that side of things, with, you know, the cell phones, especially the newer, bigger cell phones, batteries are pretty good, but, you know, the more you're using a screen, the screen time, the more those batteries wear down. So, you know, having maybe a Gold Zero battery backup where you can get two or three charges on an iPhone, pretty good, pretty important to have. And then, you know, just having your Garmin GPS. And in fact, the Garmin Minis, which really aren't they are a GPS, but they're not like for topo stuff. It's more for communication and for SOS features. Right. So if you're going to be hunting alone, I think it's a necessity to have something that has the messaging availability, or at least the SOS service, so that, you know, if you get stuck between a rock and a hard place, you don't have to chew your arm off to get out of there.
You know, we talk about, you know, your phone and the way it can be used in the outdoors, and it's wild to think, you know, you're not just sitting there, you know, playing Candy Crush when you're waiting. But, you know, there are additives you can put on, you know, with your optics, your binos, or your rangefinders, or your spotting scopes, because now you can hook your phone right to the piece of equipment.
Yeah, the phone scopes, and then we've been doing really well with mag views. You know, it's a magnetic attachment that kind of goes around your eyepiece, and it just keeps a real thin magnet on the back of your phone. So the time to actually put that phone on and get it adjusted, kind of, it's nice. It's a lot sleeker than the phone scope, where you have a case that kind of goes around your case. There's a lot of great options, especially if you're scouting, or if you're maybe you're in the back calling for a buddy and you want to take the photos. You have at least another tool to, you know, make that a more successful, you know, photo opportunity, I guess.
So you were just talking about calling for your buddies or yourself, and you guys have a whole section that is nothing but calls and scents and anything you're going to need to lure in that animal.
Yeah, you know, we do wildlife research for the scents. They do some really good products in there. And then Rocky Mountain Game Calls is probably one of our top game calls. Mile High Notes out of Fort Collins area, they've got some really good mouth calls and some bugle tubes. And then, of course, you know, we carry the Primos like everybody else, with the Hoochie Mamas and, you know,
hey girl,
cow talk. Yeah,
you just get out there and that's all you yell is, "Hey girl, hey and girl. Here they come." Get in here, check it all out. And I know that we talk a lot about game bags and the things that you're going to need, but those may be things that last year you used them and you know, maybe they ripped, or, you know, you mm-hmm. need to replace them. It's really important.
Boy, Havilon knives, Outdoor Edge replacement blades. You know, having a good headlamp. You know, you just never know. You know, how long we were out for a ride on Wednesday, and we were talking, and the gentleman that I was with, you know, said, you know, I packed out a moose all by myself once. He said, I was with my dad. His dad couldn't pack him out, and it took him 19 hours.
Wow.
Or 19 hours. And, you know, there's a lot of headlamp trips and a lot of, you know, maybe watching your GPS to make sure you get the first couple trails down to give yourself the quickest route back to your camp. But, you know, I mean, you don't always have access to call a buddy to come get you out. And right. You have to be prepared of, like, how am I going to deal with this? Am I going to throw it in game bags? Am I going to put it up in a tree overnight and then call in reinforcements? Or is this just let's get it done kind of a scenario?
That's a lot of thinking that you have to do mm-hmm. out there. So the more prepared you are, the better off you are in any situation. So make sure you get in here and check it out. Rocky Mountain Discount Sports or RockyMountainSports.com. And come see them. CY Avenue in Casper.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where we just gave you a rundown of a lot of great items that you could put in your pack for hunting seasons, and maybe one of those items is a new duck call or goose call, because Brian, we're at the point of the season where waterfowl is opening. I believe there's an early youth season, and then really it's game on.
Yeah, I think today's the last day of the opening weekend for youth. I think there was a early, just a 2 day, the 21st, 22nd was for veterans, and I think the youth 17 and under. So I'm curious to see how those guys did, because, you know, next weekend, and in this area anyways, duck and goose season opens for the first split.
Yeah, and so what that means, a split is where the season will open, and then the season will close, and then reopen again down the line, just to kind of break things up a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, federally they only allow so many days of hunting, and so to try to maximize, to lengthen the season a little bit, and then maybe capitalize on some of the migrating birds that are coming back north in the spring, they do those splits so we can stay open later for like geese and whatnot.
Yeah, because the weather here kind of plays a big role in the way that those birds migrate too, because if it's 70 degrees here, it's mm-hmm. likely they're not going to be moving down anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like just at least Casper area doesn't have a really good flyway. You know, there's not a lot of good crops that holds them open. We obviously have the North Platte River that stays open in a lot of areas of it, so that does hold some birds. But yeah, we just don't have the big flyway like some of these other areas have. So you know, a lot of times we're hunting local geese or the same birds, you know, over and over.
Right. And you know, and it's kind of interesting because there are a lot of geese in this area and ducks to boot, but you know, it's fun. Well, to
just on the golf course.
Yeah, right. Oh right. My gosh. Boy, they definitely fertilize it all winter long over there.
Yeah we should be paying them.
Right. So you have been talking the last couple of weeks about getting your duck blind ready. Mm-hmm. And is the early split more of your duck hunting time? Because I know you hunt a lot of geese during the second half.
Yeah, you know, I don't hunt a lot of ducks. It's just not really a passion of mine. I mean, mm-hmm. I do enjoy it to some degree, but I like to have that option open, you know, in case, you know, elk season's closed. Right. And there's, you know, there's not something else to be doing. But it's kind of hard to just manage the time, because, you know, the fall fishing is awesome too. So we got a lot to look at. But no, I do enjoy getting out. I probably, you know, hunt ducks, you know, half a dozen times a year, and geese 20, 30 times a year. So.
Right. Yeah. So, and again, you know, we talk about options around here, and, you know, whether it's bird or big game or, you know, even small game, you know, mm-hmm. at that point, we've seen a lot of rabbits, and we've talked the last couple of weeks about coyotes, and even wolf mm-hmm. have made an appearance in the Laramie Peak region. Mm-hmm. We have been talking about sighting in your rifle, mm-hmm. and you know, you may have the grain different or the powder mm-hmm. different. Does that factor in as much in shotgun shells?
You know, I actually went out and patterned some hand loads that we had put together, and I wanted to see the difference on the different choke tubes. So normally with steel or tungsten or bismuth, you know, you don't want to get too tight of a pattern. It can actually damage the gun. So you want to be shooting modified or a wider choke than that. And so we put these loads together, and I just went out to like 40 yards with a 20-inch target. And I wanted to see, you know, how it was going to pattern. And sometimes what you'll find is, you know, maybe the load's too hot, where maybe the wad is pushing through the center of the pellets, and it's blowing out the pattern itself. It was kind of eye-opening to me. The modified choke tube for the tungsten loads that I was testing on my 28 gauge did seem like the center of the pattern was a little sketchy, like wasn't as good as I would have liked it. Mm-hmm. But then as I moved to improved cylinder and then cylinder bore, the pattern looked really good. And so, you know, I'm all looking at that pattern, envisioning, well, how does a bird get through this? You know, I mean,
right.
So I think it's important if you get the opportunity to, you know, try to pattern your gun so that you have an idea of when you're pointing that gun at a bird, you kind of have an idea of like how big that target is or that, that pattern is at, you know, 30, 40 yards, whatever you feel like that average shot is for you.
So really it may be important, the pattern more than a powder, you know, that you're shooting in there.
Yeah. And you know, every manufacturer is probably going to, you know, they're going to have different loads, different speeds. And I'm sure they've all tested them out, but you know, how the chokes affect that pattern, I think, is more important than anything else.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that's why we talk about things like this on you know, this show, because maybe you're just getting into bird hunting, mm-hmm. or you've wanted to go out and you haven't had good luck. Mm-hmm. Just tips like that is enough for, you know, to change your day from no limit to full limit.
Yeah, you know, and even like shooting the shotgun, you know, we were kind of free-handing the shotgun and pull the trigger, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't know if that was necessarily the best centered, you know, shot on that pattern, you know. So, you know, maybe you get a set of bags or, you know, sandbags, and you know, you actually just set it up like you would a rifle to actually try to give yourself, you know, the best possible opportunity to shoot on target to see. And what we were looking for there is, you know, the density of the pattern, and then how many pellets were within that 30-inch circle, and so you can kind of count and see if there was any bigger holes in the pattern, and then see if it repeats itself. And then once you find the choke tube that is giving you the best results, then, you know, go with that one. And then, you know, there are a lot of different aftermarket choke tubes. We carry the Carlsons here. And we have everything from, you know, a short, long distance to skeet tubes, that kind of stuff. And again, we carry, I don't know, probably 60 different choke tubes for variations of different gauges of shotguns.
So really, if you're interested in maybe checking this out, come on in and check them out before you hit the field here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And again, RockyMountainSports.com, and you can get your shopping experience started.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Hunting season upon us. One of the fun times. We talk a lot on this show about how exciting from about late July through February are for big game hunters here in Wyoming. And today we bring in Jamie Morales, Executive Director of the Dallas Safari Club Wyoming, and Cody Bish, Game Warden from Wyoming Game and Fish. Guys, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yep, thanks for having us.
So, Jamie, one of the reasons we wanted to bring you in from Dallas Safari Club is you guys have really been active for a few years, and really still the ball is starting to roll on this organization. And in Wyoming, it's fairly new, but really it's exploding. And can you tell us a little bit behind the Dallas Safari Club and the connection with Wyoming?
Yeah, so really in a nutshell, Wyoming DSC just makes a better future for our wildlife and for our communities. We support local conservation and education projects, and it's really important for us to promote hunting heritage. So in addition to funding these local conservation projects, it's important for us to advocate for youth and female hunters. And we definitely are starting to get the ball rolling. This past year in 2024, we'll probably get close to helping fund around like $80,000 to $90,000 wow. worth of projects. So yeah, it's been great.
It's fun to see an organization in its, I guess it's young phase, because things are really starting together, and as you guys are growing and growing and growing, you could see the people that are interested. There are a lot of organizations in Wyoming that benefit conservation, and people want to be involved as much as possible. And you mentioned quite a few programs. And what are some of the programs other than the dumpster program that you guys have been involved with?
Yeah. So this year, let me see where we're at. So you can view a full list of the programs that have already like benefited from our funding since we started way back in like 2019. Obviously there's going to be a little curve there from COVID, but the current year we've contributed funds to Scholastic Shooting Foundation, the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation, the Wyoming Game and Fish Dumpster Project, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. And then we're still in the process of working with a few other local organizations and projects, which we plan to contribute an additional $40,000 to $50,000.
Which is fantastic to hear those numbers, because that benefits conservation as a whole. And one of the great parts about Wyoming is people care. You know, people get behind programs because they want it to last forever so that their kids and the grandkids will benefit from this too. And Cody is a game warden. Cody out of Glen Rock, and this time of year is very busy for game wardens, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Yep, we're ramping up.
You guys, and one of the things that is interesting about being in Game and Fish is the fact that you love the outdoors. That's why you're in the program. That's why you do what you do. So hunting you probably bet. Becomes a little bit of a scarce thing for you at times.
It can, but yeah, it's replaced with a lot of purpose that I have with my job, and I'm in the outdoors a lot. So I love what I do. No complaints.
Which is awesome to hear that. And that's one of the great things also about Wyoming is, you know, if you live here, you live here because you love it. And Jamie, when you guys decided that you were going to benefit the Game and Fish Dumpster Program, this is one of those programs that has really become important with the chronic wasting disease as it's really developed and grown over the last few years. And why'd you guys decide this program?
So really how it happened is our current president, his name's Jeff Smith. He's been attending, you know, some just meetings that the commission holds and the Game and Fish. And he just stuck around, you know, till the end and was talking to some game wardens and some biologists. And really how it started was him asking, you know, how can we help? You know, it was in July when he had this meeting. And so hunting season was upon us. Everyone, you know, had been out scouting and stuff at that point. And, you know, he said we could really benefit from adding some more dumpsters, you know, for these carcasses. And we thought it'd be a great way to tie in, you know, a little bit more education about the chronic wasting disease and, you know, help out the community and the Game and Fish all in one swoop.
And how'd you guys go about raising the money? Was it just something that you guys, okay, we had this in an account, let's give it here? Or did you have specific events?
So it wasn't a specific event for this. So we raised all the money for the money that we're funding this year at our 2024 gala. So we have an annual gala every year, which we raise, I would say 95% of the funds for the year in that large gala. It's a, you know, fundraising night. We have a casino night on Friday. It's a lot of fun. We raise a lot of money for wildlife conservation.
And so Cody, I want to go to you now because this is kind of your forte because we're in the hunting seasons. When it comes to these dumpsters, how will that benefit the stop of the spread or containment of CWD?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I guess, first off, gosh, it sounds like you guys are doing a lot of great things, Jamie, and we really appreciate the opportunity to work with you guys and having these dumpsters available. You know, over the course of the last 5 to 10 years, and more so in the last five, across the whole state of Wyoming, carcass disposal has been an issue, a problem, and it's for various reasons. One of them is a lot of the local landfills are going to transfer stations and getting rid of their animal pits, and so there's just nowhere for folks to take their carcasses. And as we know with chronic wasting disease, we don't want to spread it. So if folks don't have a place to take their carcass, then the potential for that to end up wherever on the landscape is higher. So it really just all boils down to having a place for folks to take their carcasses so that it ends up in a approved landfill to hopefully help the spread of chronic wasting disease.
Well, Cody, where are the dumpsters that Dallas Safari Club donated?
The one in Riverside Encampment, and then the one that's going to be here in Glen Rock that they're specifically helping us with. And it'll be out for the month of October, which is the big time when most of the seasons are clipping right along. And it'll be dumped about once a week by sanitation companies and taken to approved landfill. And it'll be great for those communities.
So it really is working in favor of the conservation of the deer, antelope, elk herds around to try to stop the spread of of this horrible disease that, you know, researchers have been working on for such a long time to get more information about. But one thing we do know is if those carcasses that may be contaminated or may not be are disposed of properly, then that's a great way to help stop this from spreading.
Oh, you bet. Yeah, it's just a good thing for the community in many ways, and in turn, the wildlife resource.
Are there any rules when it comes to these dumpsters? I know, you know, like people will maybe get antelope, or they'll get an elk, or maybe they have a carcass from a different animal on the property. Are there any carcass that can't be dumped there?
You know, as long as it's wildlife carcasses, I think we're okay. It doesn't matter the species. Just no household trash. As long as people respect that, it'll be there for the community to use for its intended purpose.
And which, Jamie, this is exactly what we're talking about, what Dallas Safari Club is all about, is doing things to help conservation and help the conservation community. And just like Cody said, even if you're not a hunter, maybe you love to go out and hike. And the last thing you want to see is, you know, a carcass laying right in the middle of one of the hiking trails.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I wouldn't want to be, you know, out with my dogs, you know, taking a hike and then, you know, just seeing a carcass. I don't think anybody really would want to see that, whether you're a hunter, like, or a non-hunter. And so, yeah, I think that what Cody said is just, you know, being better stewards of the land, and for us being able to provide, you know, something for the community, a proper place to put it, it's just going to make them, you know, more apt to use that dumpster instead of just, you know, laying it somewhere, because it can be a hassle. Like Cody said, there's a lot of landfills right now that aren't, you know, having the animal, you know, drop anymore. And so it would take some time for somebody to research where to take that carcass. And that's just like one extra step in the process. So this just makes it easier, more convenient.
Very good. Well, Jamie, if people want to get involved and help out with causes like this, what's the best way to join up?
So what's awesome about it is it's simple and it's free. You know, currently when you join, you'll receive a free trailhead membership to what we call the Mother Club, you know, DSC. Wyoming is a chapter of the Dallas Safari Club. But you just click on free membership at our website, which is wyodsc.org. So wyodsc.org. Super easy.
And get ready for the gala, which is coming early 2025, right?
Yep. So February 7th and 8th, you know, save the date for that. Everyone likes to get dressed up. We have outfitters from all around the world that are going to be there. We have furriers. We have, you know, really great vendors that are there on Friday night, you know, and Saturday night's our big gala night. So it's a lot of fun.
Obviously, you want more information on dumpsters or the program, go to wgfd.wild.gov. Cody, Jamie, thank you guys, and good luck this season.
Appreciate it. Happy hunting, yep. Everybody.
Yep, thanks.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.